Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Today is June 30th, 2011, Thursday. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for the Law Offices of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC, immigration.com. This is a community conference call where we answer questions posted by the community to the best of our ability. Merely attending this call does not make you our client, nor does it make us your lawyer. There is no obligation of any kind from either side. That said, I'm going to start the answers to the questions that have been posted. Do note, this call is being recorded, so if you don't want to have your voice or your name, identity, etc., made public, when I ask you to ask any questions that you might have, keep your identity confidential or don't speak. The call will be publicly available. We post it on forums. So with that said, let me switch to the question. Excuse me for a moment. The first question posted on the forums today is from Jayant. His EB2 case has a priority date of 2007. I-140 was also approved. Company has 250 consultants, financially very stable. EB2 salary is 80K. Current H-1B LCA is 72K. Just because there was a break in Jan and Feb of 2010, the company maintained a salary of $5,000 per month to compensate the bench payment. The problem is your LCA salary is 72, so the bench salary should have been $6,000, not $5,000. At least that's what it looks like to me. Can this be a problem for my green card? Never know. It's very difficult to predict that. We have seen cases, but mostly in the context of I-140 approvals. Usually, it has not become a problem once the I-140 has been approved. But the government is forever coming up with new problems and new issues that they can raise. I hope that it won't be a problem. It's just 2 months, but you never know. It's very difficult to predict how it's going to work out. I would very strongly recommend, even though the company is stable and, you know, you probably don't want to move. But once you file the 485, you may want to consider after 180 days of filing 485, moving using AC-21. I think that would be the smarter thing to do, in my opinion. You want to learn more about AC-21, you can go to my blogs. There is a bunch of articles I have written on AC-21 that pretty much sum up the law for you. Okay, I'm just going to unmute everybody for a second, make sure everybody can hear me in just 1 second. Can you guys all hear me?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, very good.
Yes.
Conference muted.
Okay, back to the questions. Next question is from Suzanne. Suzanne had gone to visit her parents when she was going to have a baby, and she had already gotten her green card. Now she's been out for 8 months, but due to health reasons, she couldn't come back. So she's concerned when she comes back, is she going to have a problem? Your situation is pretty unique. What I would want you to do is keep with you documentation that shows what happened and why you had to stay there for so long. Of course, you'll have your baby with you, but a letter from the physician explaining the health reasons, et cetera, may be a good idea. And the doctor should say that it is because of his advice or her advice that you stayed back in India. The fact that your husband is living here in USA would help you. So overall, I don't think it should be a problem coming back into USA. It is my belief that once you come into USA, you have to apply for a form I-130 for your baby. Okay? So you should keep a letter from your doctor as well as, you know, whatever other documents you think are needed to support it. I personally feel you're going to be fine. Next question, Satya Fani. Satya says, I am on L1B. Visa expired. Extension was filed in time. So visa, I'm assuming that your L1B I-94 also expired on May 20th, but before that, an extension was filed. You got an RFE on June 21st. Wife is 21 weeks pregnant. What are the options to continue till December 2011? Well, first of all, respond to the RFE as late as possible, I guess. Unlawful stay, which is your question, when does the unlawful stay begins? I want you guys to understand the difference between unlawful presence and out of status. These are two different things. Out of status and unlawful presence, both are deportable. If you get caught, you can be put in removal proceedings, you can be deported, and if you are deported, then you can't come back for 5 years. But that rarely happens for many, many reasons. In most of these cases, you should be able to get voluntary departure, so that stops that five-year problem from happening. But the risk remains. There's one big difference between out of status and unlawful presence. When you are merely out of status, you are not incurring automatically any permanent damage. But when you are unlawfully present, you are incurring automatic damage. After 180 days, you can't come back for 3 years. After 1 year, you can't come back for 10 years. So unlawful presence is an automatic bar. Okay. Now, in cases where an extension is properly and timely filed, in other words, you are still in L1B status and they filed your extension well within time, your unlawful presence does not begin till the day your case is denied. So if USCIS denies your case 3 months from now, your unlawful presence would begin from that point forward. I cannot think of any way you can continue to stay in USA. You can try applying for a B visa, giving extraordinary circumstances. Once the L1B is denied, I would recommend get yourself a lawyer, file for a B visa, but keep an eye out on that 180 days. You may or may not get the B, but after 180 days or within 180 days, you've got to leave USA. 180 days from the date your L1B extension is denied. Okay? That, I hope that makes it clear. Next question is from Tinu. Labor approved, employer is filing for I-140, but they don't want to give him the case number. It's very unfortunate that there are employers like that out there, but they don't want to give him the case number. So what can I do to get the case number? Well, I don't know of any way you can get the case number. You have already tried calling USCIS. I don't see what else you can do. I'm sorry, I don't have a good answer for that. You could try filing a Privacy Act request. If you go to the USCIS website, there is a form for that. It's the same form for Freedom of Information Act, FOIA, or Privacy Act request. Basically, you're asking the government to give you a copy of all the documents they have about you. It's a free request, and it's not a bad idea. It might get you your I-140 case number. So try filing that form. Like I said, it's free. Next question is, the visa stamping in my son's passport has expired. His passport is coming up for renewal. So if I send this passport for renewal, will it be a problem? No. Why should it be a problem? Basically, they send the old passport and the new passport back with you, back together. So the visa stamps and all on the old passport still show up. What do I need in order to get his visa stamping current? You've got to, the only way visa stamping can be done is outside USA. It cannot be done within USA. You've got to go back to the consulate. Next question is from Ada. I've had my green card for over 9 years. It will expire in December 2011. Husband has found a job overseas in 2003. You want to know what you should do for green card renewal. Why don't you just apply for citizenship? Because if your husband is working for a development of U.S. trade and commerce, you would have a good reason to apply for a for your naturalization, and that may be the best way to go. Why don't you send me an email, Ada? I actually dug up some information for a client for this just a couple of weeks ago. I will be able to share that with you. Send me an email through the Contact Us form. You can also email me directly to help@immigration.com. Next question is from Natasha, who wants to know, she was on L2 because husband is going on to H1. What is she going to do with her business that she had opened in partnership? Well, obviously you cannot work on H4, but you can have a passive investment. A passive investment means you do not lift a finger to manage the business. You don't do anything, not even sign checks. Basically, you put the money in and you back off. So your questions were, what will happen to my company once the status is changed to H4, I guess. Nothing. The company can go on if you are going to be a passive investor. Can I be a part of the company only as a passive investor? Can I get profit as a shareholder? Yes, you can. Can I be involved in any business activity? No. No managing, no sales, no customers. You can get income as dividends, but you have to be a passive investor. That's what is required. And that also is my best guess. I mean, I have never seen anything written by USCIS on this issue. But my best guess is passive investment is okay. Think of it as buying stock in IBM. If you buy stock in IBM, you don't go to one of the IBM board of directors meetings and pull up a chair and say, you guys come talk to me. I'm a part of the management of this company. You're not. You know, you're just an investor. So you can attend maybe board stockholders meetings. And I think is perfectly legal under H4. Next question is, from an F1 student who got an internship and he worked without authorization just for 2 days. So now he's applying for reinstatement. I think it's a very good reason for reinstatement. See, reinstatement is actually very appropriate in cases where something happened which is rather minor and it should not require penalization. While I cannot judge the mind of the USCIS, in my view, this is a very good case for reinstatement. You wanted to know if there's any other alternative. Yeah, you can go outside USA and get a new F1 visa stamp and come back. I think it may be a good idea for you to just apply for reinstatement. Next question is from Nadbram. Nadbram actually put down his case number and he says, my file number is this, so inform me approximate time for visa call, also current status of the above file. Sir, we are not immigration, so we are just a private law firm. I cannot give you that information. In fact, I went in and I edited your post and deleted the personal information that you had put in there so that it doesn't get in the wrong hands and hurt you in any way. Okay? I really cannot do much for you. You need to monitor the visa bulletin, which is on our website as well as on many other websites. Next question is from Leo73. He says, good morning, Ravi. Sir, my name is Rajiv, R-A-J-I-V. It's not Ravi. I'm about to submit my I-485 package along with my family's spouse plus 3 children. I have an approval I-140 under EB-2 category, and the employer has said they will employ you upon obtaining your green card with a salary of $125,000. Question. My lawyer said that I would need to fill out form I-134 for all my family members, including myself. That makes no sense. I agree with you. You do not fill out an I-130 for yourself. And from what I recall, it used to be an issue many years ago whether you should be filling out I-134 or I-864 for your family. My understanding is that we fill out I-864s now for the family and nothing for you. Okay? What your lawyer is saying does not make sense to me. Next question, I also may want to point out one of the reasons that people used to think that filing I-134 is okay is because I-864 requires you to be a green card holder in order to fill it out. However, USCIS does accept these forms as far as I know. But again, I myself don't fill out any 485s. If you want better information, you may want to send me an email through the contact us form. I'm not sure we would want to give you that information. Simple reason, it becomes too logistically oriented. You see, we can help you telling you the law, but we can't tell you what forms to file. So have it checked. Easiest thing is to just call the USCIS customer service and find out whether you should be filing 864 or I-134 for your family. For yourself, you do not need to file 134. That makes absolutely no sense. Next question. My wife's parents are visiting. This is from Melmas. Venki says, wife's parents are visiting on a B2 visa, and they were told that they cannot do an extension of stay or change of status. Can we apply for their green card? Look, here is the problem. When somebody enters USA, telling the government that I'm going to go in for a brief period of time, and they want to convert to green card, U.S. government can consider that to be kind of a misrepresentation, so they could easily deny the 485, which means they would have to go to their home country for visa stamping. However, for parents of U.S. citizens, usually the government is not that tough. I would, if I were you, just to keep things simple, let them go after 3 months and then start their green card so that they can get their green card through the consular processing. And they'll be here back within a year or so, I think. Okay? Next question, Bob Basic 2002. Bobby says, H-1B expired April 13th of this year. Filed I-140 in October 2010, and it was denied in May 2011. Attorney suggested that we appeal. He said that the appeal process would take 2 to 2.5 years. That is true. I-140 appeals, actually, if you go to our website and look at the processing times, you can see an entry for processing times in the footer, as well as on the right-hand side panel where the most commonly asked information is mentioned. You'll see times for AAO, Administrative Appeals Office, and it'll tell you that for I-140 appeals, they're taking 2.5 years. I had filed the renewal of my seventh year H-1 on March 16th. You received an RFE. H-1 renewal is also denied. When does the unlawful presence time start? I just mentioned that. It starts when the H-1 gets denied. If the H-1 is timely filed, it gets started only upon denial of the H-1. Can I file an appeal for the H-1? No. Better thing to do is to just refile the H-1 in most of these cases instead of filing an appeal. Appeal takes too long, I think about 6 months or so. Since my I-140 is in the appeal process, if my H-1 is denied, can I stay in U.S.? No. I-140 appeal does not give you the right to stay in U.S. Can I switch jobs and file H-1 in another employer? You can, but if the old employer withdraws the appeal, then you have no grounds for getting H-1 extension. The only other option is to leave USA and go outside for 1 year, and then you have 6 years of H-1 again, but you are subject to the quota. Sai is somebody I speak with very frequently. He says, this is regarding my son. Can we do this? He has H-4 and I-485 pending. Change to F-1. And when priority date is current, can I apply 485 again? Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Okay. So, but the problem is if somebody has a 485 and F-1 going on at the same time, it creates all kinds of issues. You may want to talk with your lawyers about this. Theoretically speaking, there is no law that says you cannot have an F-1 and then go directly from F-1 to 485. Okay. For your son, it should be okay. I think that's your major problem. You want to know whether if he's on F-1, can I later on file him to 485 because he's no longer on H-4, and the answer is yes, he can. When I'm working on EAD, can other employers start new green card process for me? Yes, they can. As long as it is based upon a good faith intention, they certainly can. Next question, MP Izaro wants to know, my question is regarding my passport. I have my appointment for a test interview. I'm not sure what interview we are talking about, but to enter USA, for the visa interview, your passport must be current. And if you don't have a current passport, they won't even take your application. And to enter USA, your passport must be valid 6 months beyond the date of entry. Otherwise, you've got a problem. They'll turn you back. Happy to Beer says, want to work part-time and full-time with an H-1B? You can. You can have a concurrent H-1. Okay? So you can have several concurrent H-1s. In fact, I had a client recently who has 3 full-time concurrent H-1s. Now, the question is, how can you work 120 hours a week? And the answer is, well, you can if you are a system administrator who only needs to be on call. He doesn't actually have to be there. He just has to be on call 40 hours each week for 3 different employers. And that, too, is legal. So you can have one H-1 for 40 hours, another for 10 hours, another for 10 hours, but you've got to have concurrent H-1s. You can have as many H-1s as there are hours that you can work. Okay, next question. can I use the same H-1B for those two employers? You can't use the same H-1B. You have to have a concurrent H-1. Okay? So if you're working for one employer, employer A, 40 hours, and you want to work for B, 10 hours or 20 hours or 30 hours, you've got to get another H-1, concurrent H-1 for B. And if you want to work another 5 hours for C, you've got to get another H-1 for C. Next question from Dame. Thank you. I am 485 pending EB3, and my priority date is current for EB2. So I'm refiling my case under EB2. My current employer denied refile my case in EB2. I found a would-be employer who's willing to file green card. I'll start to work with them after I get the green card. Is it doable without jeopardizing? Yes. Yes, it is doable as long as it is done in good faith. Remember, make sure you're not paying these guys anything because that's illegal. You're also not allowed to pay the attorney's fees for the PERM process. That's illegal. Is there any chance for my current employer to know about this? I can't think how they would know. I don't think so. Will you be able to take my case? Yes, as long as the case is being processed in good faith and nobody is trying to, you know, pull a smart one on the government, we have absolutely no problem representing you. You're welcome to send me an email to help@immigration.com, H-E-L-P, help@immigration.com. Next question is Lolina02. She's a Spanish citizen, currently working as an elementary school teacher in dual language program. I've got a J-1 visa, no 212E, no two-year requirement. If I apply for the H-1B in April 1st, well, why April 1st? Why don't you apply right now? Okay, and that is true that you can't start work till October 1st. What are my options? There really is no option unless the school qualifies for exemption. We have a school, a good client of ours from North Carolina. Even though they are a school, they qualify for the exemption from quota because they have quite a few cooperative programs with the college. So sometimes even schools could qualify for H-1 exemption, quota exemption, and if they do, then you don't have to wait. You get start working as soon as you get your H-1 approval. So that's the only thing I can think of. It depends upon whether or not the school can qualify for an exemption. Otherwise, you are stuck with the April-October problem. You can, by the way, right now the quota is available, so you can apply now, but of course you can't start working till October 1st. Next question, I don't know the answer to this question. Somebody entered without inspection, and can they become naturalized based upon mother's naturalization? You're going to have to talk with somebody who's going to research this issue for you. We would have to charge you for doing the research. I can't think of the answer off the top of my head. If I knew, I would give it to you. So please consult with somebody local where the naturalization is to be filed. That way you have a local lawyer in case you need to go for an interview and they can go with you. So you could do that. Next question, consultant 007. EB2 approved after ability to pay RFE, refiled EB3, got the same RFE ability to pay. You see, the ability to pay can be different depending upon the date of filing. Let's say one case was filed in 2005, another in 2010. So the RFE that you got for 2010 would only require information about the employer beginning 2010. But if the I-140 is about a case filed in 2005, they want to see the tax returns for 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010. So timing of when the green card was started determines how far back they can go. Okay. 2 weeks back for the refiled EB3 I-140, they send an RFE to submit last year W-2 and the company tax papers. I have 10K wage shortage because I took holiday. Yeah, if you have a good explanation, that should not be a problem. What are my chances of getting EB3 approval? I have no idea. I have no idea. But if on the same paperwork for the same year, EB2 was approved, EB3 should be approved as well. Okay. There you go. EB3 priority date is October 2003. So naturally, they are going to go back 7-8 years for all the taxes of the company. Okay, but if it does get approved, then you are immediately eligible to port the date. Next question is Help Me 47 says, I'm an international student. I-20 had 2 years of validity. So your I-20 expired and you didn't realize it, and there was a summer gap. You're already past 5 months' time. You see, even past 5 months' time, you can apply for reinstatement. Okay, and there is a genuine reason. You didn't notice, your school didn't notice. I would say you can still file the I-539. As long as you have a new I-20, you should be fine. Okay, so go ahead and apply for reinstatement. That seems to be a good way to go. Okay, I have answered all the questions that I saw. Anybody who has a question on what I have discussed so far, press 5-star on your phone. Press 5-star on your phone. Okay, I see 1, 2, 5-star. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 people. Okay, very good. Let me get started in the order people logged in. First question is from somebody who logged in at 1:49 p.m., area code 201. Go ahead, please. Area code 201. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Hi, I am an FN student, and my username is AR209.
Okay.
And, yeah, I just wrote that I filed the reinstatement for my back-to-status but like the thing is that I asked my international office, and she told me that if I want to, because like, usually the procedure takes around 0.5 months, and my company asked me to join if it's like possible. They are able to hire me back as soon as possible. So I was looking on online, and I see one thing called I-539 procedure. So can you explain me more about it? And if I apply for expedited I-539 in the between of my process, is there any chances that it will affect my case?
Okay, I'm a little confused. Are you planning to do an H-1 at the same time? Is that what you're planning?
No, actually, I'm still left with my couple of courses. So, like, I'm still a full-time student, and I will be in my CPT. So, like, once all the courses were completed, then after I can apply for OPT and then after H-1. So, like,
okay,
right now
okay.
I'm just looking for CPT and completing
my course. Well, I-539 procedure is actually, if you read the instructions on the form I-539, they are pretty clear what you need to submit to the government. For people who are applying past 5 months, they have to have a good explanation. And you can explain your situation in a letter, exactly what happened. Be honest, be truthful. Send them copies of all your transcripts showing that you've been attending classes, that you're a bona fide student, you're not making things up, and provide a personal statement showing, you know, all this can be done in a letter. It doesn't have to be 10 different letters. Use common sense. Whatever you think USCIS needs to know, tell them your story, exactly how you came to be out of status. They should be able to do your reinstatement, in my opinion.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Good luck. Next question is from area code 303. Go ahead, please. 303. I can hear you.
I'm sorry, I wrote my question and you answered me. My L1B is an RFP. Before that, my company tried to file L1A and that got denied. Then I still had valid status on L1B. I filed for extension and before my I-94 date expired. So right now, as per your definition, I'm in out of status, but not unlawful status. So if this continues, would this impact, say, I'm going to file my response for RFP.
Let me stop you for a second. Let me correct something for you. When somebody has filed an extension request in a timely manner, they are not out of status. They are in authorized period of stay, which is sort of another bird. It's not full status, but it's not illegal. So until the case is denied, you're not illegal. You're allowed to continue to work. For H-1 and L-1, there is a special grace period of 240 days. They can continue working while an extension is going on.
Yes.
Okay? You're not out of status yet. You are merely an authorized period of stay, and you can continue working. Now go on with your question.
If my visa case gets denied, will that count out of status for the number of days after 994? Because unlawful stay starts after that.
No, unlawful period as well as out of status for you would begin to start on the date your case is denied.
Okay. question. Will this affect my future GC processing?
Not if you don't go past 180 days.
Okay, then that's helpful. Is there any other alternative for, because say by the time the denial or whatever comes, my wife will get into kind of 7 months.
Yeah,
away,
I would have you apply for a B status and hope for the best at that point of time, giving all the particulars of your life and, you know, how exactly you came to be in this spot. And maybe USCIS will be kind and give you B status within USA.
Okay, so that's the only option.
Yep.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Good luck, sir.
Appreciate your help.
Bye-bye. Next question is from area code 240. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv.
Hi.
This is Jayant. Like, mine is the first question. You answered my question, and I have like a couple of questions regarding that. Currently, I'm on 8-year extension. Okay.
All right.
Can I switch now with the 140 approval?
What I would want you to do is switch after your 485 is filed, 180 days after your 485 is filed. Because if you switch now, there are two possibilities. Either the employer will revoke the I-140 or they won't. Chances of them not revoking are very small. If they revoke your I-140, under current INS thinking, you would lose your priority date and you would also lose the right to extend your H-1.
Okay. So once the 485 is filed, then like...
And pending 180 days, then you are free as a bird. Take a similar job anywhere in the country, you are fine. You don't have to redo your green card.
Okay. They cannot even like revoke it, right?
If they revoke it, it doesn't matter anymore.
Oh, is it? Okay, that's fine. And one more thing is, like, in my labor approval, like, it is, like, May 2007. But in my 140, the priority date has been, like, printed as, like, May 2001.
If there is an error, it should be corrected.
So we need to correct it right now? Or like...
You need to correct it, yes.
Okay. So it is exactly, like, 2007 instead of 2007. Looks like they have made it like 2001.
No, that they are not going to. Even if they approve the green card by error, they can actually revoke it after later on. Don't take that chance.
Okay, but it is already like from 2008. I am just maintaining it like that.
So that's okay. You can get it done now. No problem.
Okay, all right. Okay then.
Good luck.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Sure, Jayant. Okay, next one is area code 857. Go ahead, please. 857. Okay. Next one is area code 925.
Hello, Rajiv.
Yes.
Yeah, hi, Rajiv. My name is Naveen. How are you?
Good, Naveen. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, Rajiv. I have a quick question. I haven't posted that question, Rajiv.
That's all right. Go ahead. We have plenty.
Okay, great. Actually, I have a couple of questions. Currently, I'm on my H-1B visa that will expire on September 30, 2011. That is the seventh year. And my employer is filing H-1B extension petition in premium processing because I have to go back to my home country for visa stamping.
Okay.
So when I fill out DS-160 form, is it okay to put the current H-1B petition number, or do I need to wait until my H-1B petition extension is approved and then put the new WAC number or something like that?
You have to wait till the approval of the new one.
Because my problem is that if I wait till the approval, then my appointment date, I may not get the appointment date. I'm planning to go like in 1st of August. I mean, first week of August.
You can send an email to the consulate, see what they suggest. I don't see how you can do it without getting approval first.
Okay, so a consulate, like, what is their email address and how do I?
It's on the U.S., it's on the website. If you just say any consulate, like New Delhi consulate or Chennai consulate, wherever you're going, just say, type Chennai consulate, and you'll see there's an email address. It starts with something like NIV, non-immigrant visa at usus.gov, something like that.
Okay.
So it has something like an NIV in it.
Okay. Do you see any
website? It's on their website.
Okay, sir. I will do that. And also, one follow-up question is that do you see any potential problems if I put the current petition number and then I go for visa stamping?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question because it's up to the consulate. I would, you know, in something like this, I would rather tell them what I'm doing, you know, and just ask their opinion about it.
Okay, sir. I have another question. Thank you. I have another question is about my I-140. Recently, I-140 is approved, and it is in EB2 category. My company has offshore in India also, so I'm going back to my home country, which is India. And if I go back to my home country and work from there until priority dates become current, and will I be able to come back to U.S.
Only
after?
Only if you and your employer can show that there's a good reason why you are leaving and that there is still a job available in USA for you.
So at what point of time we need to show the INS that...
They might ask that at the consular interview or at the 485 stage.
Okay, so let's say if I go back to sometime and if my dates become current after 4 years, will I be able to take the green card and go to, to obtain the green card, can I go to U.S. consulate in India?
As long as you have a good explanation for it. This is a dangerous area. You need to contact your lawyers and make sure they know what you're planning and get their advice. And if you're not comfortable with what they are saying, go ahead and make an appointment to have a consultation with me separately. Because this is an area of the law where you could end up losing your green card if you have not planned properly for it. Not every situation is suitable for taking a 2-3-4 year break from U.S.
Okay, because I was just wondering, is there any requirement?
Theoretically, it is possible. Practically, I do not know. I don't know your case.
Okay, sir. Because I asked, the problem is that I'm not able to reach the actual lawyer of my company. So paralegals, she said that...
Tell them to change lawyers, sir. This is ridiculous. You should have complete access to your lawyers.
Okay. Sir, actually, I will just mention like what she said, sir, if you don't mind. What she said was, you have to be physically present when we file 485, she said.
Okay.
Even though you
now, this is under Virginia law, a paralegal giving you this kind of advice would be arrested and put in prison. That is called practice of law without a license. And under Virginia law, that is a misdemeanor. That's a crime.
Okay, so there is no rule that I have to physically be present when 485 is filed, isn't it?
That definitely is the rule, but there is a lot more to it.
Okay.
Just after filing 485, you can't pick up your bags and leave. That creates these complications that I'm mentioning to you. That's why you need a lawyer, not a paralegal advising you.
Yeah, okay, sir. And one last question is, sir, actually my company is from a BEP company, Business Executive Program company, but recently there were some changes to the, it looks like company broke the policy of the INS and they removed the company from the BEP list of the companies, like top companies like TCS and other companies are there. That is one of my companies also. So if they remove that, now I'm going for visa stamping. Will it cause any issues because I'm coming
not
from...
Not the removal itself, but I would be worried in this economy, I'm worried about anybody going for an H-1 visa stamping. I don't know if they're going to be able to come back. Unless you have an in-house job, if you have client placement, it is always uncertain whether you're going to be able to make it back or not.
Okay. Okay, because I was just worried that if this is a BEP company that was there for like...
That's not the only thing that bothers me. What bothers me is just in general... An H-1 visa for a client-side placement is a problem issue.
Okay. Yeah, I'm working for a big consulting company, like 100,000 employees.
It doesn't matter if they have 100 million employees. Still the same issue.
Okay. And also, regarding this, sir, if I go to Hyderabad consulate in India, because I came to know that there are some issues that all L-1 visas are getting rejected because there were so many... duplicate documents have been put by the employees of so many other companies. So are you aware of any situation or do you have any latest news on that?
I don't have any negative information about H-1 visas in general, but I know that H-1 visas have become extremely difficult.
To get, okay. Sir, actually, when I spoke with you like 6 months, 7 months ago, actually, I got the same advice from you, sir. So I postponed my trip to
India.
Still,
it's still the same problem. At the start of this letter, conference, I had made some remarks about what we have done, and we brought the matter to the attention of the economic advisors to the president, making it, you know, very clear that this has become a very big issue for everybody. Let's see what they do.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Thank you so much for all your responses.
Good luck.
And yes, sir. Actually, for all H-1B, it's a big client. I'm working for the client, and it's a full-time. I mean, I'm working full-time with my company, but it's with the client.
Well,
so I have a big project.
It's difficult to predict how it's going to play out. Things are not very encouraging right now. That's all I can tell you.
So would you suggest that I take the client letter also from here?
You'll have to. You'll have to. Even after supplying all the information, you still may not get the visa.
Okay. And what are the reasons, sir? Why are they just...
That's what we have said in our letter. The reason given is your employer appears to be either unable or unwilling to give you a job. That doesn't tell me anything.
Okay.
So these are nonsense reasons. They're absolutely complete garbage, but that's what we are dealing with.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Next question is area code 225. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is regarding my wife's question. She has posted like the second question in this forum. I just wanted to know what's the basic law regarding that, maintaining the PR.
See, the basic law is if you are 1 year or over outside USA, your green card is pretty much automatically gone.
Correct.
If it is less than 6 months, they don't question you at all. If it is more than six but less than 1 year, they can question you pretty closely just to make sure that you have not quit the intention of living permanently in USA.
Okay, okay.
That's all
so,
they just want to make sure okay. You're not misusing your green card to just, you know, visit USA.
Sure. So should she bring along any specific, you know, medical-related...
I think she should bring a letter from her doctor explaining why she was asked to stay back and have her delivery in India. Then
okay.
She should have hospital bills, whatever bills she can carry, just to show that this is genuine.
Okay.
And remember one thing. Let me reassure you on one point. If you show up at the U.S. border with a green card, they have to let you in.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing they can do is, if they're not convinced with your story, they can take away your green card, let you enter USA, and then give you a date to appear before an immigration judge.
Okay, okay.
You go to the immigration judge, you explain the story, and you get your green card back.
Okay. And also for the child or the baby, is there some kind of follow-up document, or
Form I-130. I don't think you have been here since the very beginning of the conference.
No, I joined late. That's why I'm asking
It's already been recorded. I said you have to apply for I-130 as far as I know.
At the port, right?
No, when the child comes in, the baby comes in.
Okay. So
maybe a procedure at the port that they have that I don't know about because I haven't looked into this for quite a few years now. You can call CBP also. By the way, CBP is another great tip. CBP is very good about responding. If you call CBP, go to cbp.gov, get their phone number, call them.
Mm-hmm.
They're very good about responding. And it's up to CBP what to do at the port.
Oh, okay. Actually, I emailed two counselors in India, and they basically,
it's not a counselor issue. It's a CBP issue.
Okay, understood. Okay.
Because when you land at the airport, CBP interviews you.
Right.
It's
okay.
Not USCIS, it's not ICE, it's not consulate, it's CBP.
Okay, and actually I'm just referring to the law that they send. It has to be the first time a PR resident is coming back, when one of the parents should be the first time, right? Because
I believe that's the way it is.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Bye.
Okay. Area code 201, go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. My name is Inder.
Hello, Inder.
And it is about the travel issue. Thing is, some of my friends, they applied for the reinstatement through California Service Center. Uh-huh. And after it's been like 3 months, so they called them and they told the time limit has passed the general processing time. So after 1 week, they received the email from the USCIS that there is some background check going on, so that is why it is taking time. Now, I applied to the Vermont Service Center, and in Vermont Service Center, there are some of the students who got the result, but I haven't. So I was like I called them, but they told me that it's still under the regular processing time. So once the processing time passed, then I can make the request or I can come to the office to meet them. So, and it's been like more than 3 months for my case, but the current processing times, the current processing dates, they are showing on I-539 at Vermont Service Center is February 12th. And I filed my application on March 10th. So I don't know whether, like, should I stay here on reinstatement or should I leave?
No, I think you should wait for your reinstatement. Let's see what goes on with that.
Okay, and like if same thing is going on, like background check in my case, can you tell like how long it could take?
I don't know the answer to that question, and the only thing I can tell you is that because the case against Susan Sue is going on in California, the government is probably trying to find witnesses that they can find against her.
Okay, and one more thing is, like I also filed my H-1B in the month of April. So could that be a problem during the reinstatement?
No, not at all. I don't.
Okay, because I was wondering like that there might be a rule like if you apply for reinstatement, your intention should be a student, not an H-1B. Could they count that?
It is your intention, but you're also protecting yourself. I don't see why it should be a problem. At least so far, I have not seen that problem. There are other people who've done the same thing.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you, Raju.
Good luck, Inder.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and is there any further development you know about in this issue?
No, things just pretty much fizzled off.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Raju.
You're welcome. All right, guys. Anybody has a question? Press *6, *5 on your phone. Anybody has a question? Okay, I have one more question. Press *5 if you have a question. Okay, area code 240, go ahead, please.
Hi, once again, back with a question.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you were mentioning about the correction of the priority dates on the 140 and Rabel.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
So any idea how long does it take, Roy?
I don't know the answer to that question. If it's a minor clerical error, they might be able to do it fairly quickly. But it could easily take a few months.
Few months?
Yep.
Since the priority date is like getting closer,
Are you talking about your true priority date or the false priority date that you put in the final coding?
True priority date.
Yeah, get it corrected anyway.
Okay.
Because I think it should be corrected as quickly. It should have been corrected earlier.
Yeah, now only I noticed it. And
yeah.
Any idea about the visa bulletin, coming visa bulletin?
Maybe. I'm sorry?
Question.
I don't have access to any special information sources, same as everybody else.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Good luck. Okay. I have 3 more hands up since, and these are the last 3 I'll be doing. Then I've got to run. Okay. Let's start with area code 857, please. Go ahead. 857. Area code 857. Can't hear you. Okay. Area code 610. Go ahead, please. 610.
Hi, Raju. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, Raju. My name is Raghav.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm a Tri-Valley student. I was a Tri-Valley student.
Okay.
And I have worked on the CPT of the Tri-Valley.
Oh, yes.
Student.
You had written me an email. The employer
yep.
refusing to pay.
Yep.
You see, this
yep.
is the way
yep.
it works. Let's say you have worked for an employer in the state of Maryland. Okay, give me your state. Which state did you work in?
Actually, I'm a contractor. I worked in Texas, but my employer is in New Jersey.
Okay, what you can do is call the New Jersey Department of Labor.
Okay.
Okay, if you just type NJDOL in Google, NJDOL,
mm-hmm.
you come to their
mm-hmm.
website, which is www.nj.gov/labor.
Okay.
Just type NJDOL in Google. You'll come to their site. You contact
okay.
them and say, my employer is not paying me. I have worked. Now tell me what I need to do. And basically, mm-hmm. they take their, you take your complaint and they contact the employer and get your money for you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, working on the CPT, does it have any impact? I mean,
no, if you had a proper CPT authorization, I mean, I don't see why that should be a problem if you've worked.
And also, I have one question. Actually, Tri-Valley University closed on January 19th, and I have worked till February 8th.
I would still say that as long as you had no official information about your EAD being revoked, at least you can argue that your money should be paid.
Okay. I mean, so there won't be any further damage to my case. I mean, because
no,
I have already...
I mean, if you want your money, you've got to take that much of a chance. I think it's okay to argue that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And also one more question is that I have re-entered U.S. just a couple of weeks back. So is that a good option to go for an H-1 or do I need to wait for some time?
No, you can go for an H-1 whenever you want.
Actually, one of the attorney told me that, I mean, once you enter U.S. on F-1 visa, you need to wait for at least 60 days for the change of status.
There is a 30, 60, 90-day rule that people refer to. But in cases where a situation is unique, I would want you to discuss this with your H-1 lawyers. I personally feel that in many cases, that rule does not require more than 30 days anyway. So, you know. Something to think about. Talk with your H-1 lawyers. Personally, I don't see a problem.
Okay. So regarding my payment, I can go ahead and file a case with NJDA.
I believe you can. And, of course, there is always that off chance that this could escalate and the government could come back and say, well, you worked without authorization. But the thing is, you know, this whole Tri-Valley student situation was so messed up, nobody quite knows what to do with it. So it's okay.
Okay. So would you suggest me to go with this one or shall I quit? I mean, I'm supposed
depends.
To get around...
What do you want your money or would you not take even 1% chance to get your money?
I mean, I'm just worried about the Tri-Valley, that's it. Otherwise,
no,
I would have...
You can't have it both ways. You can't go for your money and have absolutely no risk at all, but I think the risk is rather minimal. That's a judgment call. I could be wrong.
Okay,
I would go for the money. If it's my money, it should be given to me. Why not?
Okay, then. Thanks, Raja. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Good luck. Okay, area code 201. This is my last call of the day, guys. 201, go ahead, please. I can hear you, sir. Area code 201.
Hello.
Yeah, I can hear you. Hello. Okay, well, it looks like I'm not able to hear or they're not able to hear me. I'm going to stop the call at this time.